Welcome to the Apologetics.com radio show. I'm your host, Jeremy Livermore, and we are talking tonight about bioethics and human enhancement technologies. And this show is a continuation of a show that we did back in November of last year, 2017. And what we're doing is we're going to be diving into some bioethical topics related to the future and what it means to be human from here on out, because the future may look a little bit different for humanity. As weird as that sounds, we may be evolving, so to speak, at a faster rate, and we may be forcing our own evolution and kind of becoming in control of that. So this sort of topic obviously is a vast topic, and we can only do so much in a one-hour show. But what we'd like to get into tonight are some of the human enhancement technologies that are out there today and that should be coming if science and engineering progress at the rate they're going, and also try to understand the ethical issues surrounding these technologies, the questions that come up for humanity and what it means to be human. And then we're going to look at what the Christian response is and what the Christian worldview would say about these technologies and the future of the human race. So a lot of the topics that typically come from apologetics materials and talks and lectures related to science and faith tend to be backward-looking in terms of what the Bible says about some sort of scientific topic. But in this particular show, we kind of want to look forward and try to wrap our head around the image of God and what it means to be human and created by God and designed by God. And in light of all of these revolutions that we're seeing in science today. So to help me do that, I have my good friend, Dr. Leslie Wickman, on the phone with me. Leslie, are you out there?
I am. Hi.
Hi.
Jeremy, it's good to be here.
Yeah. And I also have my other good friend, Ryan Pauly, here in the house with me. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Good having you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you guys will help us out to cover this vast wealth of information that's out there in 1 hour, and I know you'll do a great job. And before we get into all of this, I wanted to mention that this show is sponsored by the American Scientific Affiliation, which is a great organization for those who are interested in the science-faith dialogue. And Leslie, as I understand it, I believe you are actually at a ASA conference, is that right?
Well, no, not exactly. I'm at the AAAS conference, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, here in Austin, Texas this weekend, representing the ASA at that conference.
Awesome. And is there a particular theme that conference is about?
No, it's actually, we were just remarking about how diverse it is. The plenary speaker this evening was Ellen Ochoa, who is the director of NASA's Johnson Space Center and also flew in space several times. And she was talking about the International Space Station Laboratory. Another plenary speaker that's coming up later in the weekend is Joe Biden, who's going to be talking about cancer research. And another one of the plenaries is Catherine Hayhoe, who is a Christian who will be talking about climate change and is one of the preeminent climate scientists in the U.S.
Wow.
So it's quite a diverse agenda.
That sounds great. I'd love to be there. Is the ASA well represented at that conference?
We have a handful of people, at least. We have a booth with information about the ASA and information about our upcoming conference in July that I'd like the listeners to be aware of. July 27th through the 31st, we are holding our annual conference in Boston area. at Gordon College. And the theme of that is actually biotechnology and bioethics. So it fits in very well with the theme of the show tonight.
Right on.
So our listeners can check us out at ASA3.org. That's ASA3.org, and get all kinds of information on the conference, our journal. The website has tons of resources on science and faith in general, and specifically many resources on this topic that we're discussing tonight in terms of bioethics and biotechnology.
Yeah, that's so true. In fact, as I've investigated the website more and more this past winter, I've realized how many resources are there, and especially related to this topic. And it's a great resource for those considering science and faith issues. Also, I noticed there's a newsletter that you can sign up for there if folks are curious, and they can kind of keep up to speed on what's happening with the ASA. In fact, in one of the newsletters that came in my inbox, it had this announcement that Francis Collins was actually going to be one of the keynote speakers at this year's ASA conference in July. Is that right?
Yes. We just found out he was able to clear his schedule to be able to participate. And so we're very excited that he'll be there as one of our keynote speakers. As you know, Francis Collins is the head of the National Institutes of Health and was the head of the Human Genome Project, and as well as an evangelical Christian. And we're very excited that he'll be joining us for that meeting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. It's great to have him. And he actually is kind of a forerunner in a lot of the breakthroughs that have taken place in the last 20 years, 30 years, that have led to a lot of the genetic engineering that we're now going to talk about. So, yeah, so basically human enhancement technologies, this is kind of this three-word phrase that means essentially anything that has to do with changing a human body in such a way that it is enhanced. And so there are all different types that could be classified and categorized under human enhancement technologies, all sorts of different modifications. And so what I wanted to do with this show is just kind of walk through some of these and chat about what they are, and then talk about what bioethical issues come up and what Christianity has to say about these things. So if you're out there listening, you'd like to call into the show, I invite you to chat with us, 1-888-LA-TALKS. That's 1-888-LA-TALKS. And we'll take your call, and you can chime in to let us know, have you experienced any of these HETs? Are you someone who has an artificial limb, or know of someone who is involved with genetic engineering as a profession? Maybe you can give us a call and tell us your thoughts. How have you interacted with human enhancement technologies so far? So again, 1-888-LA-TALKS. We'd love to hear from you. So Ryan, Leslie, there are a lot of human enhancement technologies that are coming around, and they're here now and are coming in the future. And one of the main ones has to do with genetic engineering. Genetic engineering is a big deal. It's been happening, I guess, in mice since the 1970s. And essentially, it relates to embryonic genetic modifications. And perhaps in the future, it could relate to adult genetic modifications. So people who are adults could have an injection, so to speak, of cells that could come in and correct cancerous cells, for instance, or an injection that could correct some other cellular tissues that have a disease and possibly lead to a cure for Alzheimer's and things like this, Huntington's disease, cystic fibrosis, other diseases like that. And then obviously at the embryonic stage, there's a lot that could take place there before the embryo develops into a baby. So Leslie, Ryan, When you hear genetic engineering, what comes to mind for you?
Well, all kinds of things. I mean, you know, genetic engineering could lead to the idea of, you know, what has been kind of tongue-in-cheek referred to as designer babies, right? And I think one of the key things that we want to be talking about tonight is, you know, where is that line between genetic engineering or human enhancement technologies that are used as therapy or in a healing way versus kind of crossing the line beyond what humans are today to make humans into something that they have never been, rather than just correcting problems, right? So there is that ethical line that goes, you know, beyond, like I say, just the therapeutic or healing technologies to extend humans to beyond what they actually are today. So those are some of the things that come to mind for me. And one thing I wanted to mention early on in this conversation is Elon Musk, who is, you know, the head of SpaceX as well as Tesla, and is a very futuristic thinking entrepreneur, has an interesting quote on this, and he says, you're already a cyborg. Your smartphone enhances your mind, your spectacles enhance your vision, and your pacemaker, if you have one, regulates your heartbeat. And this trend will only continue. So I think it kind of gives us some idea of what we're talking about and some of these things that are already in effect today.
Yeah, and I agree with Leslie in a lot of what she's saying, that we have to learn how to classify this, because, you know, as she talks about with the smartphone enhancing you or your glasses allowing you to see better, those are things that we all accept as being normal. But then does that mean that we should then allow for all enhancement technologies? And there's definitely a line that gets crossed. And so when I immediately start to think of genetic engineering, I think of all the times throughout human history where we have crossed the line trying to perfect a certain race or eliminate other races that we saw were lesser than us, trying to create this kind of human that we want that to be. Mm-hmm. There's been lots of examples of how we have crossed the line in that. And so it's one of those things where it's a very difficult kind of dilemma to think through. Where should we draw that line? And how do we keep from crossing it? Because as, you know, worldviews show us, of sinful human beings, we constantly are trying to better ourselves. And this has been happening for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. To reach our own perfection. We want to be the God ourself and be in control and be our own saviors. And so we have to be careful on where that line gets drawn.
Yeah, that's great, actually. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, one other thing I was just going to say is just as with any technology, it seems like, you know, in human history, as technology has developed, the technologies tend to develop sooner than our ethical framework for using those technologies.
Yeah.
And I always, you know, go back to the, you know, development of nuclear weapons and how that technology came into existence before we really had the time and the opportunity to develop a framework for using it. And I'm somewhat concerned that this is the same thing is happening here.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing because we get so accustomed to the technologies that are so basic, like a hearing aid, for instance. For an elderly person that's lost their hearing. And no one really thinks there's an ethical dilemma there, you know, just like, thank God you've got a hearing aid, Grandma, so we can talk with you and you can hear us. And we don't have to shout and you don't have to yell back at us, you know.
Right.
So then it kind of gets a little bit in the gray area, though, when you're starting to talk about enhancements for, say, a soldier, for instance, going to war. So let's say you have genetic modifications that happen to a soldier that makes him less prone to bleeding, and he doesn't get hot and sweat as much. He doesn't require as much food, these sorts of things. He's stronger, kind of like a Captain America, so to speak. who had been enhanced according to the comic books, you know, and the movies, right, to be.
Well, then even, yeah, and even before you get to that, Jeremy, you know, there are things in the nearer term, like exoskeletons that that soldiers will be able to use to make them stronger and faster and greater endurance and that sort of thing. So, I mean, even before you get to some of the genetic engineering kinds of enhancements, we have these technologies that can be used to enhance soldiers' performance. So there is this kind of string of events and technologies that can be implemented. And even with hearing aids, if we go back to that example, you know, there are hearing aids that can help to restore someone's normal level of hearing. But then what about enhancing hearing to what we would call a superhuman level, where no one has ever been able to hear that well, or corneal implants in the eye that enable people to see far better than 20/20 vision, you know? So those are some things that are kind of easy to imagine, but are we crossing the line there?
And
with those kind of simple things.
Yeah, that's perfect. So there's the healing side of it, right? To kind of restore what was lost or what should have been. And then there's this above and beyond capacity that seems very possible in the near term with some basic technologies that are around us today. And so you don't even have to have the genetic modifications to the soldier. You can get a super soldier perhaps with, like you said, the exoskeleton. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, it's just simply this outrigger set of structures that could be worn by a soldier or any athlete or any person for that matter. You can walk down the street with these things, and essentially it takes a lot of the loads off of your joints and makes it easier to walk. And it's, you know, you got a real true spring in your step. So if you start putting these mechanical devices on you, at what point does it become a place where you're no longer a human being? And so that question becomes more poignant when you think about a soldier who's lost their limb in war, and now he doesn't have any feet. And so researchers and other engineers such as those at MIT have these really enhanced labs where they're taking electrical impulses from the brain that are directed from the person who lost their limb to move that limb, but at some point there's no limb there, so the electrical impulse just stops in the skin somewhere down there at the end. But with their technology, they're able to find that impulse with a sensor and then take that pulse, if you will, and make the machine of the ankle move in such a way that he has a walking motion when he puts that artificial limb on. And so there, it seems like that's a restoration, but if it's done in such a way where it becomes easier or for him to walk, or he becomes faster than a normal human, then you have an enhancement.
Right. Right. Exactly. And there are things as simple as the, you know, RFID chips, the radio frequency identification chips that some people are already getting implanted into their hands, where they can use them to do the tap and pay with your banking information, or unlock doors, or things like that, that are literally starting to be used now.
RFID chips. So that's really interesting. And then I also heard recently about someone had a retina restored in his eye, and and that was done recently, so that a person that would have been blind can now see. And we're talking about someone who had their body parts cut off. There's this other person that was a quadriplegic, and he had a chip implanted into his brain, and now he's able to send some impulse to that chip, and it sends a signal to the sleeve around his arm, and the sleeve allows him to lift up his arm in such a way where he can actually grab onto a glass of water and move his hand around as it perhaps guides him, his hand and his arm, and he can do things like swipe a credit card and even play apparently Guitar Hero, which is a video game. So things like this seem to be kind of this gray area between what's a restoration and a healing and what's an enhancement, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also fair, important to ask the question of, you know, what's giving you kind of the enhancement to an unfair advantage over other people. You know, I think of, you know, Ritalin is used, you know, with ADHD children to help them concentrate, but then we also have college students who are taking it just to help them have a better focus on a test and giving them an unfair advantage over those people. You also have, you know, steroids in sports giving you an unfair advantage over others, whereas it's possible that some of these, you know, like the chip to help you swipe your credit card, that's not necessarily giving you unfair advantage over other people. That's just making ease of life easier. You know, same with the technology of cars and smartphones and that sort of stuff. And so I think it's important to kind of ask that question as well as we get into kind of dissecting these a little bit. Is the healing restorative aspect of the enhancement, the making you more superhuman type aspect, what is giving you an advantage over other people that can be used in inappropriate ways, and then also what is just kind of giving you a more easier life is how technology is allowing us to do.
And another thing that plays into this whole thing is, you know, it's one thing to have some of these technologies used on yourself, you know, to decide for yourself that you want to employ some of these technologies, whether for therapy or restoration or even enhancement. But the idea of genetic engineering on a fetus, for example, is an instance where the organism itself is not choosing this enhancement, right? It's someone else that's choosing for that organism, whether human or otherwise, to employ this enhancement on it. And is that ethical?
Yeah, that's actually such a big topic. So going into genetic engineering is something that is a really hot topic, from what I understand, with the rise of this new scientific breakthrough and technology called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R. And basically, as I understand it, I'm probably going to screw this up in such a way, but you guys can correct me. It's apparently a new gene splicing technique called clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats. And apparently with this approach, it makes it 1,000 times cheaper and faster for scientists to do gene editing than ever before. And this technology has been around for about 5 years.
Yeah. And I was actually just at a Christian Scientific Society meeting a couple weeks ago, where one of the scientists from Reasons to Believe, a Christian science apologetics organization, said, this is one of the greatest inventions. But the reason is that one of the uses of CRISPR is able to take normal adult cells and revert them back to the kind of the pluripotent stem cell, like embryonic stem cell stage. And with that, then that will now remove the need that we have for using embryonic stem cells. And so we have just an unlimited supply of adult stem cells and adult cells, and then this can then take it back to that. And so the ethical dilemma of how should we use stem cells, especially embryonic stem cells of killing the embryo to use the stem cells, that now ethical dilemma is gone, using CRISPR technology in order to use more cells for that purpose. And so in that sense, I think, you know, in some ways it does have good advantages. And
And Leslie, were you going to chime in on that?
Well, just from the standpoint of, you know, when we talk about doing these kinds of things on a fetus and deciding for that fetus, you know, the types of modifications to make. I mean, it is one thing when it's used in a therapeutic or restorative way to get rid of a disease, But like you say, the enhancements are the where we get into this kind of ethical gray areas. Who is it that gets to decide what the best characteristics for that fetus are to be, right? And that's kind of where we have to look back at history into the eugenics movement and the types of decisions that were being made there.
Yeah, absolutely. The eugenics movement was such a huge ethical moment in our nation's history, as well as in many other nations' history, like Germany, for instance, prior to the World War, World War II. So, and I have, my own family has a background with eugenics and mental health issues right here in the LA area that I've shared on the show on in years past. And it's amazing what we are capable of doing to those unborn who have no say in the matter, but are having this forced upon them. And so is that right? Well, what if we knew that they had HIV and we were able to do what Chinese researchers have recently done, which is to take 213 embryos and make them HIV resistant. So that's something that we may need to do if we're a loving and caring parent, perhaps. So these are the types of things we're going to continue to talk about after the break. Give us a call, 1-888-LA-TALKS, and we'll be back right after this.
The mission of apologetics.com is to challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe on the radio, on the internet, and now in the Life of the Mind conferences. If you believe in the work that apologetics.com is doing, we encourage you to support us with your prayers and also with your tax-deductible gift so that this ministry will continue on the air, on the web, and in events near you. Gifts of any amount are appreciated, and it's very simple to participate. Just go to apologetics.com and click donate. It's safe and secure. Or you can send your check or money order to apologetics.com, 1900 Southwestern Avenue, San Pedro, California, 90732. Thank you for supporting apologetics.com.
All right, let's get back to the apologetics.com radio show.
Welcome back to the Apologetics.com radio show. We're talking about human enhancement technologies and the bioethical issues surrounding them. And we've been talking a lot about genetic modifications and genetic engineering, CRISPR, and the different issues surrounding that. And, this is obviously a huge deal. I mean, Leslie, you mentioned those who don't have a say in the matter and we're forcing these modifications on them. There seems to be a problem with that. And Ryan, you were talking recently here about how you could have genetic modifications in such a way that the person having the modification is actually, what were you saying actually? Remind me of that.
Was it that they would have like an unfair advantage
over
other people?
Yes. Yeah. And we were also talking here right at the break about just the mental capacity of someone who takes Ritalin or some other drug during an SAT test to help them focus and enhance their brain's capacity and strength, so to speak. And you were saying that you, as a teacher, you haven't experienced that much, right? But you've heard about this happening a lot with college students?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, I don't know of any of my students taking any drugs for that reason. But it is something that in the education field that I've learned about that students will take certain drugs, whatever it is, to either keep them awake all night so they can study or give them the focus to pass their SATs or ACTs or whatever it is to graduate from these classes and get into top schools. And so... Mm-hmm. you know, that's the same idea of that we've created these drugs for the healing purpose of helping someone who really is in need. But because of the human tendency to use things for our own personal advantages, we've now taken those and are using them in inappropriate ways to gain an advantage over other people. And we would, you know, I think most of us would say that's wrong. That's unfair. In the same way that taking steroids in sports would also fall into that similar category.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great example, actually. And there's this other related topic, kind of moving away from genetic engineering, but it has to do with enhancing the brain capacity. And from the Pew website, the Pew Research Center is a reputable polling institution, I believe in Washington, and they have a great online article about human enhancement and ethical issues surrounding it. And they talk about brain capacity enhancement from an external source, not from genetic modification, but they talk about how scientists have been using electrodes and the circuitry that's put around a brain during some testing. And this transcranial direct current stimulation, as they call it, TDCS, is used to enhance brain plasticity, making it easier for neurons to fire. And this improves cognition and making it easier for test subjects to learn and retain things from new languages to mathematics. So if people had these devices and used them more often, it can enhance people's brains capacities above and beyond healing or getting it back to a place where it should be, like if someone has ADD or ADHD, for instance. So the idea is that they could become so regular and so popular amongst the culture, amongst society, that they're part of our lives and we use them just as regular as our smartphones. But that, like you said, gives some of us who have that an unfair advantage, and that doesn't seem to be appropriate when we first think about it, because part of this conversation has to do with how to distribute these human enhancement technologies and what sort of distribution is appropriate, and how would you go about doing that. And it seems that immediately the utilitarian ethic comes up, and I'm sure you could help us understand that here shortly, Ryan. And that kind of gets us into this second part of our conversation related to the categories of how to understand these technologies. We mentioned the healing category, and we mentioned this advancing category. So I wonder if you or Leslie can help us understand these categories of how we would categorize these and where we would put some of these technologies, like designer babies, for instance, and smart children, making our babies have brains to make them smarter than the neighbor's babies. Where would you put some of these technologies, and what are the categories?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I just kind of went over with my students is I think that part of the Christian worldview, it teaches us that God has given us intellectual abilities to be innovative and to innovate and create new things. And so that's part of what God has given us the ability to do. And so to help create these new technologies to alleviate the effects of the entrance of sin into the world, I think is a good thing. As we've talked about, the healing capacity. And so God has given us these abilities. Then also recognizing, though, that things like eye color, hair color, height, gender, these are God-given things that are the way that God designed human beings to be. And so if we're altering things that God has given us, then that is a little bit different rather than simply the effects of healing. So as you just mentioned there at the beginning of kind of one of the categories, I think we've kind of been talking about that so far on the show of the healing aspect, because sin has come into the world, has damaged us, and we're trying to help alleviate some of that effects of sin versus the enhancement.
I had an interesting conversation on the plane ride here to this conference in Texas. It was almost like the setup for a joke. I was sitting in the middle seat, and on my right-hand side was a rabbi from Cedars-Sinai Hospital in the L.A. area, who is very involved in medical ethics there at the hospital and pursuing a Ph.D. in bioethics. And he and I were talking about some of the information and articles that I was reading on human enhancement technologies. And we got into this conversation about the ethics involved and whatnot. And the guy on my left was kind of leaning in, and he said, I'm sorry, I'm eavesdropping, but I work in an industry that actually takes advantage of some of these things. And the rabbi and I kind of looked at each other, and we said, well, who do you work for? And the guy says, he works for Playboy. And both of us were just kind of shocked, and we were just like, oh, my gosh, this is just so bizarre. Yeah. And, you know, but he was talking about how, really, it's an extension of cosmetic surgery and the ability to use stem cells to enhance your various body parts to get the body that you want, you know, really is human enhancement technology. But in a sense, it's just an extension of cosmetic surgery.
Wow.
So that's a whole nother application of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And what an interesting moment that must have been to be sitting on that plane between those two.
It was very strange.
Yeah.
That I hadn't even thought of.
Yeah. I think about facelifts. When you brought that up, and sex changes, for instance, you know, it seems to be changing the nature of what we are when we're doing that in some strange way. And I wonder where you guys would put this in proposed human enhancement technology that could come about through genetic modification that has to do with reducing the effects of aging. Would you put that in a category of the healing side of things here, or would it be in the more of the advancing side of things?
Well, to me, it seems like that humans have been known through the ages to look for this kind of source of almost immortality or almost eternal life on Earth, right? And that, to me, seems very clearly to fall into the category of enhancement, not therapeutic or restorative, but extending humans beyond what they were created to be.
Now, I actually have a question for both of you to kind of get some more thoughts on this. Is would the person's mindset or attitude going into it affect how it is? Is the person receiving a new limb or a new shoulder or a new knee because they want to try to get this immortality and extend their life? Or is it, look, I'm trying to use my life for the way that God has given me. Like, my knee went bad. I'm having a hard time getting around. So let me get this new knee and I can keep going, you know, for the purpose of God. And so would someone's mindset going into it, whether it's, you know, I'm trying to reach this immortality and live as long as I can, or, hey, I'm just trying to fix this broken shoulder and get a new shoulder while I'm still alive and be without pain. Does that affect also then how we look at these technologies?
Right. And I think, I've been involved in sports all my life. I've had 3 knee surgeries already, and I'm probably at some point in the future looking at knee replacement. You know, in looking at that scenario, part of it is, you know, okay, I have chosen to live an active lifestyle, and therefore I've had some injuries that have kind of impacted my wholeness in a sense. So, you know, part of me wants to say that, well, you know, knee replacements or shoulder replacements or whatever, pick your joint, are a restorative or a therapeutic kind of thing. But that's not going to extend the length of your life, right? So if it's restoring something to normal human function, to me that's a different category than actually extending the length of your life.
Yeah.
Do you guys see that?
Yeah.
Is that just me?
No, I'm with you on that. I was recently watching this TED Talk, and for those who are out there listening, if you go to YouTube or the TED website, you will find quite a lot of talks given by folks around the world on this topic, transhumanism, human enhancement technologies, and changing what it means to be human. And so I invite you to look into those. Obviously, they're not really coming at it from a Christian worldview like we would be here on this show, which we'll get into shortly. But on one of the TED Talks, this guy was mentioning this idea that through genetic modifications, we could actually have cells become, leverage the cell's energy or synthesis as synergy, so to speak, to reverse the effects of aging. So the cells themselves actually create a person who's younger, so to speak. And it's hard to imagine that, but it's kind of like if someone had Alzheimer's and then we had a cure, and then those synapses now are connected properly and they don't have any weird growths on them blocking the C fiber firings. So that's kind of the idea with that, I think. And that's, I think, where this gray area becomes more gray, is that if we are helping the person with Alzheimer's to no longer have Alzheimer's and realize, hey, I should go exercise every day and I should eat healthy, you know, then that may prolong that person's life quite a lot. And if we keep doing these things, like you said, Ryan, put an extra limb on me so that I can go for a daily walk and have a great lifestyle, then that may add 10 years to my life, you know? So that's, I think, one of those areas where it's hard to pin down which category it would really fall under.
Yeah. And I think that's where Leslie kind of jumped in just a moment ago of talking about restoring normal functions, which would be the replacement of the knee or the shoulder. Whereas I think what you're mentioning of actually reversing cells, that's not restoring a normal function. That really is changing the very fundamental nature of who God created us to be and how the world functions, and trying to counteract that to extend life. And so I think there is that small difference there. It's not just restoring a function. Yeah. It really is trying to counteract the natural laws and systems and how this universe has been created.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and extend the life of individual cells and therefore the entire organism.
Yeah. Yeah, so some thinkers use this idea of life extension and life enhancement. And so mm-hmm. I think if someone was experiencing Alzheimer's and had that brain function restored, then you both would say that would be part of the healing therapeutic category, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good, good.
And I mean, the same thing would be to, you know, you're taking blood pressure medication, you know, that's in a lower, you know, if you have high blood pressure, that lowers your blood pressure, allows you to live longer. But again, I don't think that's an enhancement necessarily. That's just trying to restore your body back to its, how it's supposed to function, before, you know, as I mentioned before, the entrance of sin into the world has caused there to be brokenness, and we're trying to alleviate some of that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, when we have the power to do so, ethically speaking, we should use those resources to restore and heal, right?
I do think that there is a level of responsibility. If me being a 29-year-old guy and I have, let's just say, high blood pressure or some sort of issue, to, and that's easily fixed without super invasive surgery and a lot of, you know, having to go through major stuff, that's a very easy, just take some medication and you're fine. I do think as Christians, we do have a responsibility to do that, to live a life for God. Where you draw the line on how invasive something has to be and where you kind of have that moral responsibility. But I do think, yeah, that we have a responsibility to take care of our life. And if I can easily just exercise and or take something that'll help restore me back to how God intended me to be before the brokenness, I think that we do have that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. It seems that as we learn how to cure cancer and Alzheimer's and other things like this, eventually we would find ourselves living to be 200 years old, you know, maybe 300 years old. And some on the TED stage have proposed 1,000 years old, you know, and you're around your loved ones for longer and you're able to enjoy a longer, healthier, happier life. And it seems that the more that we can cure, the longer that we will live. You know, nowadays people are living in the developed world to, what, 80, 85? Is that the average age, I think? somewhere around there. And so, yeah, I'm with you. It seems that when we have the resources to do the healing, we should, ethically speaking. And, but then what about this question? If we have a reason to go fight a battle, for instance, say the United States of America has a reason to go stop some injustice somewhere. But in order to do so, we would have to send in super soldiers to do this special mission, for instance. Should we enhance ourselves, so to speak, to go into an area that has atomic activity, nuclear activity, and we enhance our genetic structure to resist that sort of thing, and we go into there to fight the battle and perform the mission?
Wow. Well, I think you're kind of crossing into an area that has more than just the kind of bioethical question, right? I mean, because obviously you get into the kind of just war theory and the ethics of war and that sort of thing as well. So that is an even more complicated question, I think.
Sure, sure. We'll set that aside for a second. I mean, just the idea that should we, when would it be right or good, ethically speaking, to enhance ourselves? Is there ever a case? You know, if we're saying that the healing side of things is fine and ethically moral, then is there ever a case where we should enhance ourselves?
Well, that's a great question. I think one of the considerations that we need to at least distinguish between is the idea of the somatic effects versus genetic effects. And just to clarify what I'm talking about there, the somatic effects are things that apply to the individual organism that chooses to have the treatment, okay? So that versus a genetic effect, which would alter the genome that would be passed to the next generation, for example. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think at least from an ethical standpoint, I think we can say that anything that is in the least bit in a gray area should at least be limited to something that would only affect the organism that chooses to have the treatment. Does that make sense? So if an individual decides they want to implant a cornea that gives them superhuman vision, and let's say rather than having 20/20 vision, it gives them 100/20 vision. In other words, they can see at 100 feet what a normal human being can see at 20 feet, right? So it's one thing to say, okay, they want that that enhancement for themselves. It's another thing to say we're going to figure out how to genetically modify a fetus to have that kind of vision that will then be passed on to its progeny. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I was actually going to add something as well, just very similar, and so just kind of repeating what you said, Leslie, it's just this idea of we sometimes, we're creating these technologies so fast and not really thinking about the ethics of it, and we sometimes look only at the how is this going to affect the person doing it, and not realizing that a lot of the genetic modifications, these are going to be passed on to future generations. What is this going to do into the second and third and fourth generation that these genetic modifications are continuing to change? We don't know. And so it's just to jump out and say, let's just do it. It might help this one person. We don't know the safety of how this is going to affect the human race for, you know, in future generations. And so this has to be something that has to be approached very carefully, knowing that, look, you're making changes to people who are not signing up for this. And what's interesting in our culture right now, that personal autonomy and free choice is one of the greatest things we have, saying, no, actually, I'm going to do something that's not going to allow the next generation to have a free choice on how we're going to affect them, or even if we're just modifying the fetus while still unborn.
Right. And even, you know, I mean, these genetic changes that get passed to generation after generation, you know, enough people implementing them can propagate through the entire human gene pool, right? So you, there's where you're talking about this transhumanism in the fullest manifestation, where you're actually changing the human race so that in the future it will be impacted by genetic modifications decided by humans.
Hmm. So that brings me to another question that I wanted to throw at both of you, if you don't mind. This is a perfect segue into this idea that eventually, let's say, for instance, 100 years from now, the gene pool is different than it is now. And there are a lot of people on the planet who have inherited modified genes from their parents and grandparents, and the gene pool looks different, and we are in this transhuman state. What do we do with that? I mean, as Christians, we can't just stop this from happening. We, you know, those who say, let's slow down, we're going too fast, science is ahead of our philosophical worldview, we haven't considered this fully. Do we tell those who are modified to stop doing further modifications? You know, and here's another related question. Let's suppose that we in 100 years know that the Earth's expiration date is coming soon. So say 100 years from now, we know that 50 years from then, there will be an end to the Earth. Do we continue to modify our genes so that the human race could live on another planet, for instance?
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's very interesting too, just in the sense of if we are actually manipulating the human gene pool, what are the long-term effects of that versus what we have today, where in general the human gene pool is getting stronger. In other words, a lot of the harmful mutations because of the cross multiplying and mixing of various people groups, harmful mutations are dying out. In general, humans are getting healthier, they're living longer, and we see this happening naturally. Mm-hmm. So if we start modifying the human gene pool, how do we interfere with that process? Do we start seeing the human gene pool getting weaker instead of stronger as it is now? So I think that is a very serious ethical question. And then, you know, beyond that, your question of, you know, is it, what about the idea of modifying humans to be able to live someplace else? And that's one that's even kind of further out there in terms of, technologies and implications and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you know, I want to get kind of a little bit practical here, I think, because maybe there's a lot of listeners who are like, man, I don't know much about gene modification. I don't know how I'm ever going to get involved in this. But I think that you made a good point, Jeremy, in that, you know, what are we supposed to do? How do we stop this? And I think this is one thing that has driven me to the study of ethics, is I find that oftentimes Christians don't really understand it. We don't talk about it. It's not spoken of at church much. And so the people going in and making the ethical decisions about all these uses of technology are not people that are coming in with a Christian worldview. We have this very transhumanistic worldview where humans are just constantly evolving, we're constantly getting better, and that's a good thing. And so one thing that I do with my students is I'm trying to help them see that, look, you're going to go into fields where you're creating software for self-driving cars, and you're going to be creating these things and going into fields where there's going to be new innovation and new technologies, and you have to know how to think about this, and hopefully from a Christian worldview. And so trying to help Christians understand the importance of bioethics because it is something that could affect us so much. If we're starting to modify genes and then that is now spreading throughout the human population, we have to think about this ahead of time and we have to be able to stop it, because there's many other things that we can see in our culture where the Christian church in general has stayed very quiet. And then these changes happen. Then we go, oh no, how did we get here? Well, it's because we let the culture get there and didn't think about it until it was too late. And so this is one of the reasons that has driven me to the study of ethics and why I talk about it so much is that Christians need to wake up and think about the things that are taking place right now with a lot of these human enhancement technologies and realize what that could do in the future. And we have to start thinking about this now before it's too late.
Well, and another point to what you're saying is that there are people out there that are saying we should just put a moratorium on these technologies until we have had the chance to develop the ethical framework to use them. And I think that's, there's a lot of wisdom in that.
Yeah. And in fact, as Christians, we love to help others find information. So maybe, Ryan, you can share real quickly about a resource that will help guide us?
Yeah, so a couple of different resources. Scott Ray's a professor of ethics at Biola Talbot School of Theology, wrote a book called Moral Choices, an Introduction to Ethics. It's a great introduction. And then there's a lot of blogs and stuff. You can find mine at coffeehousequestions.com, where I write on these kind of issues as well from time to time.
Yeah, in light of that, I'd like to close this show by just saying that as Christians, we believe the image of God has to do with this idea that we are made to live on this planet Earth and reflect all of what God is and who God is. But part of our destiny, so to speak, is not to be eternal here and now because of our own ingenuity and fortitude. It's to receive His care and love and His provisions for us. And in that, due to His grace and mercy and the work of Jesus Christ, immortality is granted to us in the afterlife. And this life is meant for a struggle, and it was designed that way for us to look towards God for His grace and for His help and for Him to be with us. So in light of that, we find courage and hope and passion and perseverance in this world because He designed it that way. And in the next world, we will receive Him as our reward. And the Christian worldview encourages us fighting and persevering in the face of suffering, in the face of death, in the face of disease, and finding our hope in Him. So in light of that, I'd like to close the show. You've been listening to Apologetics.com radio, and we'll be back next week. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Leslie, for your participation.
Thank you.